Last week we brought you the comments of Newark Mayor Cory Booker referring to the It's All Politics podcast. Now, with a dissenting view, the President of the United States.
Still chasing that sound, still searching for a little bit of truth, and I have to say that I am a really big fan.
I thought the introduction was totally inappropriate and was actually very dishonest.
Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elvey.
And reporting from the John Birth Society, I'm Ken Rudin.
And Ken, I'd like to say this is the first time we've heard from a bloviating ignoramus even before the podcast began.
or not somebody sitting in front of these microphones.
Of course, what you heard there at the beginning of the podcast was the president praising Bob Dylan at the Medal of Freedom Awards ceremony at the White House this week. Ken, I have to tell you, for the sixth year in a row, the podcast did not win a Medal of Freedom.
No, but I've always loved Bob Dylan. First of all, I used to watch Gunsmoke every Saturday night, so I enjoyed that very much.
I also thought it was amazing that Bob Dylan, since he couldn't appear himself, was able to get the blind ghost of Vincent Price to appear in his stead.
And we also heard Donald Trump objecting to Wolf Blitzer and CNN's introduction
of
Donald Trump. But we'll get to that in a minute. I think the big news of the week is that Mitt Romney, officially or unofficially, depending on your count.
Unofficially, but officially if you're the Associated Press.
And also unofficially, officially if you are the media looking for a big story.
That's a shocker, too, because it's been weeks. It's been weeks that we've been wondering, who is it going to be? Who is it going to be?
Explain to me that whether Mitt Romney officially or unofficially clinched the nomination, Republican nomination for president.
And one could say that unofficially he clinched it back on April 10th when Rick Santorum dropped out.
Is there a reason you're mentioning Rick Santorum? Ron Elvin?
I have no idea.
Okay.
But let's just say that he's been the last man standing on the Republican side for a very long time. So clinching it this week, okay. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't.
But we always love to look at the number of delegates needed, and the Republicans, it's 1,144. And with his big victory Tuesday night in Texas,
69% of the vote,
Mitt Romney goes over the top. But
only by the count of the Associated Press. Other counts, including the official count of the Republican National Committee, show him still shy. So it is entirely a media-designed finish line, just like the 100 days, the first 100 days of a presidency. Totally media-designed.
Or the 300th podcast.
For example.
Yeah. But anyway, the point is that even if it is an artificial number that has been reached, Mitt Romney had to know that the media would focus on going over the top after Texas. Why is that the day? Why did he pick that day to appear everywhere with Donald Trump? Explain that to me.
The only explanation for it I can possibly think of is that he is in the power of Donald Trump. He is entirely being controlled by Donald Trump, and Donald Trump is making all his moves for him like a hand in a puppet.
Mitt Romney has, on occasion, said some impolitic, inopportune things on his road to the 1,144, but never did I see him be so politically tone deaf with this week by appearing with Donald Trump, because obviously the only thing the media want to know is what does Donald Trump have to say about the so-called birther issue, and Donald Trump...
Well, now, wait a minute. You're saying the media don't want to hear anything else but that. Who put that out there in the hours and days immediately before this moment?
No, I'm saying the only thing that they have to talk about with Donald Trump is this issue, because that's all Donald Trump wants to talk about. And Donald Trump, being the shrinking violet he is, he'd rather not discuss things like that.
Imagine how big that violet was before it began shrinking.
There was too much sex and violets on television. Ron, come back to the mic.
Too much sex and violets.
About time.
Where were you?
He could have met with Donald Trump at this fundraiser next week.
Or last week, or some other week, any
exactly,
other week.
Not on that day when the headline would be Mitt Romney goes over the top. In fairness to Mitt Romney, the first person of the Mormon faith to win a presidential nomination. Many have tried in the past. I could think of Orrin Hatch and Mo Udall,
And George Romney for a period
that's
of time
right,
in 1967, 68.
Right.
All right, and so in a way, it's a comparable milestone for the people of the Church of Jesus Christ of the Latter-day Saints, to the 1960 breakthrough for American Roman Catholics when John F. Kennedy was the nominee. Of course, there were far more Catholics then than there are Mormons now, But the Mormon Church is a growing, expanding part of the religious and particularly the conservative religious movement in the United States. So in some respects, while it may be far smaller than the Catholic population of 1960, it is as dynamic a part of the political equation.
Absolutely. I agree completely. I mean, I think there are just as many Mormons, if not more, in the United States than there are Jews. And of course, the Jewish community got a big boost in 2000 when Joe Lieberman became the first Jew on a major party ticket as a running mate. So I think this is a historic moment, absolutely.
So, milestone moment for Mitt Romney and the Mormons, but lots of that got essentially obscured by the media fascination with Donald Trump and his fascination
with
Donald Trump and also with the birther issue. So on we go. He goes on CNN. Donald Trump does. Wolf Blitzer is loaded for bear. He's got all the evidence of the president's birth in Hawaii. And here's a little bit of that exchange.
If the state of Hawaii says this is official, he was born in Hawaii on this date, here it is, why do you deny that?
A lot of people do not think it was an authentic certificate.
How can you say that if the...
report it, Wolf, but many people do not think it was authentic. His mother was not in the hospital. There were many other things that came out. And frankly, if you would report it accurately, I think you'd probably get better ratings than you're getting, which are pretty small.
You know, I've heard of ad hominem arguments. I've heard of ad wolfum arguments. But this is an ad ratings argument.
I don't know what's more embarrassing, listening to Donald Trump or listening to CNN putting Donald Trump on the air.
This, of course, was further amplified, if you will, by bringing George Will into the argument, or George Will inserting himself into the argument on Sunday when he on ABC's This Week had this to say.
The cost of appearing with this bloviating ignoramus is obvious, it seems to me. Donald Trump is redundant evidence that if your net worth is high enough, your IQ can be very low and you can still intrude into American politics.
So another week has gone by, another week of focusing on Donald Trump and the birtherism, which stepped all over Mitt Romney's somewhat unofficial celebration.
But there was other news from Texas this week, and perhaps even more important than the news for the presidential election, and that had to do with the Senate primary on the Republican side and one particularly surprising Democratic House primary there in Texas.
Absolutely. Let's start with the Senate race first. Once again, we've seen this in several states. David Dewhurst, who is the lieutenant governor of Texas, very powerful lieutenant governor. It's very powerful.
It's a very important office.
He's been lifting weights for years. David Dewhurst, somehow, even though very conservative, served ably under Rick Perry for the last 10 years.
Supported by Perry.
Supported by Rick Perry.
Texas establishment.
He became the establishment candidate, and thus, if you're an establishment, you have to be opposed by the Tea Party.
Bad news.
And there was Ted Cruz, the former Solicitor General, who is now forcing Dewhurst into a July 31st runoff.
Now, Ted Cruz is the son of a Cuban immigrant, and he has been quite a blue chipper himself all the way through his career. He has an Ivy League education. He's been very successful in Texas politics. And really, while he was down in the 30s percentage-wise in this primary, he could have the juice to overtake Dewhurst in the runoff election, partly because he has this extraordinary backing of, as you say, Tea Party, Jim DeMint, the senator from South Carolina, who is a Tea Party leader, Sarah Palin, of course, from Alaska, and also the Club for Growth, which put in pretty early for him and then doubled down as it got further along. They're obviously gambling that this is going to be another one of their Richard Murdoch kind of success stories.
And July 31st, the runoff primary in the middle of the summer, who knows what kind of a turnout will come up. The Tea Party could get its forces out, but at the same time, you know, Rick Perry still has something to say in Texas politics. He's not going away anytime soon. There's still talk about him running for another term in 2014. He put a lot of his prestige on the line for David Dewhurst, and he may get whatever organization he still has on Dewhurst. But again, it's another example of the so-called establishment versus the Tea Party insurgents, and we expect more of that to come.
That's right. Also over in El Paso, in the 16th Congressional District, Sylvester Reyes, who had served 8 terms, a 16-year veteran of the House of Representatives, lost in his primary to a city councilor named Beto O'Rourke, who has been, again, the sort of person who grew up there in El Paso. I believe he's a fourth generation El Paso native. He went east for school, then he came back to El Paso. He and his wife have been very active in the community. He's not even 40 years old yet, but he's already had a lot of experience in local politics, local business, downtown development. And here he is defeating a Hispanic, well-established Democratic incumbent who was not thought to be in trouble.
Not only well-established, President Obama made a rare primary endorsement in this race. He usually stays out of primaries. He endorsed Reyes. Bill Clinton campaigned on behalf of Reyes in the El Paso district, but it's hard to make the case why O'Rourke beat Reyes in the primary. But one thing we should point out is that the Campaign for Primary Accountability, the anti-incumbency group that has targeted incumbents on both parties, decided to go after Reyes in the primary, spent a couple hundred thousand dollars, and that may have been enough. And Reyes is now the sixth member of the House who has been defeated in the primaries. Add one more senator, Richard Lugar. You have seven members of Congress being defeated in the primaries thus far, and it's still only May.
And another candidate for losing his primary would be Thad McCotter. Now, this one's a shocker. Thad McCotter is kind of an unpredictable, somewhat eccentric guy for a Republican from Michigan in the House. But earlier this year, he had a bit of a quixotic run at being part of the presidential field.
He was really the only Republican not to be a frontrunner.
That's right. Never led the field. That's never right. Really joined the field. Didn't get into any of the debates or anything like that. But he came back to his district, was running for re-election, looking for another term.
A shoo-in.
And, of course, it's a heavily Republican district, and everybody knew Thad. And even though they might have known some of his eccentricities, they thought, well, here he is. But he didn't get 1,000 signatures on his petitions for his filing.
All he got were 244
and
signatures
then worse
verified.
Yet, they started making photocopies of the ones they got and handing that in. Yeah. Somebody could get seriously prosecuted for a felony here because that's against the law. And they handed these in, so he's been disqualified from his own Republican primary ballot in August, I believe it comes up.
August 7th, yes.
Okay. So what he has to do is run for his own renomination to his own seat as a write-in candidate.
We've seen members of the House in history. There have been three or four who have been elected as a write-in. We've seen two senators elected to this.
Strom Thurmond.
And Lisa Murkowski re-elected.
That's right.
But never has an incumbent failed to have enough signatures to get on his or her own primary ballot. And the question is, who's sorry now? I'm so sad for...
You've been waiting throughout this man's entire political career for that moment.
Yes.
Okay. Serious situation, though. We don't want to take it lightly here at It's All Politics.
And speaking of another strange, bizarre turn of events, the case of Archer Davis, former seven-term member of Congress from Alabama, ran for governor in the 2010 Democratic primary, Democrat all his life. He announced this week that he's switching to the Republican Party.
And to another state.
And moving to Virginia, may even run for Congress in 2014 or 2016. That is bizarre.
It is highly unusual, and one would think it reflects both his relatively conservative philosophy, particularly with respect to business, and of course he has already been seized upon by Republicans who are showing Barack Obama to be anti-business. Why, just look at Archer Davis, this conservative black Democrat from Alabama who used to be a major endorser. In fact, I think he was the first member of Congress outside the state of Illinois to back Barack Obama's presidential ambitions back in 2007. Early Obama supporter.
But I also think he was the only member of the Black Caucus to vote against the health care bill.
Yes. And so he has had a profile as a conservative and a pro-business conservative. And he says he sees the Democratic Party abandoning business. Therefore, he feels more comfortable over on the other side. And plus, he's been making his home in the Northern Virginia suburbs now for the last several years, especially since he left Congress. So if he's going to run for office, he's going to have to run in a part of the world where he would probably have a better shot as a Republican.
And Ron, before we go, there's so much to talk about. Next Tuesday, there's the Wisconsin gubernatorial recall, and we also have primaries in five states, including California, Montana, South Dakota, New Jersey, and New Mexico. And there's situations in California and New Jersey where incumbent members of the House, Democrats all, are running against each other in the primaries. In California, it's
Berman Sherman.
Berman Sherman. It's Howard Berman versus Brad Sherman.
Sherman Berman.
And it's also Janice Hahn versus Laura Richardson in California.
Hahn Richardson.
The Compton area. And in New Jersey, Stephen Rothman and Bill Pascal.
Really interesting race.
Also in New Mexico, you have Heather Wilson, Johnson, who gave up her House seat a couple of years ago to run for the Senate and lost. She's going to be the Republican nominee against Martin Heinrich, a current member of the House.
Open seat of Jeff Bingaman, that right?
That's exactly right, for Jeff Bingaman's Senate seat.
So that's a Democratic seat that could go Republican.
And you have there's not much to watch in the Montana primaries, but that will be the scene of a key Senate battle in November, John Tester versus Denny Rehberg.
Right, and that, as we like to say about all the Senate races that are this close, could be the one that decides control of the Senate in the next Congress.
And in Montana, that will be a beaut.
Okay, but the big one, really, next week, the one that everybody's going to be watching and probably over-interpreting, is the Wisconsin recall election, Governor Scott Walker. If Tom Barrett, the mayor of Milwaukee, should win this recall election, he would replace Scott Walker for the remainder of Walker's term. This, of course, is the end of a very long march for the Democrats. They've obviously been up in arms there in Wisconsin about Walker practically since the day he took office and initiated his effort to reduce the collective bargaining rights of public employees, which to some degree is a Wisconsin tradition dating back generations, of the first state to really have public employee collective bargaining. And so this is a huge existential matter for the unions in Wisconsin. It's also become a national cause celeb for conservatives, who have really made a national hero out of Scott Walker and his willingness to take on all these entrenched powers of Democratic politics in Wisconsin.
And if Scott Walker wins, there are a lot of reasons. Certainly, he's raised far more money than the Democrats and the labor
unions. Something like 3-1 or yeah, more than 3-1.
And he's been on the air far more. But it's interesting that once upon a time when the Democrats and the unions came up with their near million signatures to get the recall on the ballot, there seemed to be momentum in their direction. And now even Democratic polls show Scott Walker ahead, albeit by 2 or 3 points. But the point is, all that talk about World War III, the Spanish Civil War, what this all means for November, what it means for the future of American democracy, it seems to have gone by the wayside. And I don't know if there's a recall overkill in Wisconsin, but it just seems like it's lost the fervor it once had. Although they're still talking about huge turnout on Tuesday.
That's right, and there'll be a great deal of interpretation laid upon this in terms of the direction of the fall vote, both for president in Wisconsin and for president nationally. And in states where labor is really a large issue and really a large fulcrum for the Democrats' vote, people are going to be saying, well, they couldn't get it done in Wisconsin. Maybe they can't get it done in Ohio or Michigan or Minnesota. And maybe that means Barack Obama's not going to be as strong around the Great Lakes as he needs to be if he's going to be reelected. We can expect to see that story. On the other hand, if this were to turn out to be a somewhat surprising upset win for Tom Barrett, you'll probably see a lot of overinterpretation about what that might mean for the Republicans and for the money that they've been pouring into some of these races, the Koch brothers' money and so forth. And that probably would be overdrawn as well. My suspicion is whoever wins or loses next Tuesday in Wisconsin could win or lose in November. It'll be a separate decision made on separate criteria.
And I'll tell you one thing, if Tom Barrett is elected on Tuesday, you know that at the first opportunity, he will be the subject of a recall election.
And that's it for this week's Political Podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR.
From senators, congressmen, please heed the call. Don't stand in the doorway, don't lock up the hall. For he that gets hurt will be he who has stalled. The battle outside raging will soon shake your windows and rattle your walls. For the times, they are a-changing. Mothers and fathers throughout the land, and don't criticize what you can't.